Yes, Prabhu, any question?
Dandavat Maharaj. We have a question from Dhananjay and Malini from Russia. So they're asking, sometimes when we do something on a regular basis in our everyday practice, we get used to it, it becomes our daily routine, and the depth of awareness starts varying. On what does it depend?
You can't outsource Krishna consciousness. There's not someone else who can be Krishna conscious for you. I mentioned the other night when came to record Babaji Maharaj, and he said the important thing is that you chant Hare Krishna. Don't you be so overly concerned with my taking of Krishna Nam. You must take Krishna Nam. So it's up to each individual practitioner. And we were just mentioning about someone being naturally curious, interested, how much personal interest is there, genuine interest. It's one thing, you know, the rote recitation of things on a daily basis, but how much individual hunger is there? If we take it away from Krishna consciousness for a moment, you can see in any other thing, there's a similar situation. Someone goes to work and does the same job every day. Someone cooks and cooks similar things every day. Right? Someone, whatever it is, athletes, they have to do certain practices every day to stay in shape. It's part of discipline. And they know that it's difficult to do those things. They're not always inspired to do that, but they force themselves to do it, knowing that if they don't do it, they will fall out of shape and not be prepared or suited. What's the other words? For the task at hand, right? They know that. They so they push on. These pursuits often dictate their diet, sleep patterns, what time they get up in the morning, diet, social life. Everything is dictated by this pursuit. And it's not that at every moment they're enlivened. I mentioned the girl from Izhevsk who won the gold medal in Korea in the Winter Olympics. She is 15. At one point, she's missing her parents. Maybe her school, maybe not. She wanted to leave and go home. And the coach lady told her, like, I actually don't need you. She had another girl who was number one and who would be number one. She said, it will be beneficial for you to be here, but I don't need you. So if you're not going to submit to my direction, these instructions, these practices, this discipline, then go home. And somehow the girl had a change of heart, stayed on, and she ended up winning the gold medal. And I'm sure there are many tears along the way, bruises, failure. I asked someone the other day, have you ever fallen on ice? I have. It's like worse than cement. It's really hard. And having fallen on ice, to get back up and try again. So these people, these athletes, they have to approach, they have to do certain things day after day to stay in condition. That's the word. Condition, to be in the proper condition, knowing that when you're properly conditioned, you'll be most fit to express your skills, right? The attempt you're making. Right? They're trying for some sort of perfection, you could say. A devotee is trying for ultimate perfection. And as Srila Guru Maharaj once said, if we observe then these disciplines, I'm mentioning sports, athletes, but don't, like doctor, they go to, you know, pre-med in college, then the medical school, that's 4 years, then medical school for 4 years, then resident, intern, one's two, one's four. If you're gonna be a surgeon, you don't become a surgeon until you're around like 35. Right? Sleep deprived, eating horrible food, being on call at any time of day or night. They make these sacrifices to achieve this position. Right? These actors and actresses that look so beautiful and they're smiling and they seem to be living a charmed life, they're every moment, they're not ecstatic and happy. To be on set, they have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes, eat horrible food, suffer miserable conditions to do something. So it's not something that just within Krishna consciousness, these sort of things, but there's another kind of life that is devoid of all these things. So Guru Maharaj, his point was, he said, if you examine, and whether it's business, the head of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, the other day, they found out he eats one meal a day, and he fasts on the weekends. And he gets up and takes like cryogenic, like cold baths. And he does this every single day, he says, to stay fit for what he needs to do. Right? So Guru Maharaj said, so all, in all these fields, you see that there's a certain amount of, first of all, dedication to that, to a particular end. Right? They're moving in a particular direction. How, there's a goal, you know, prayojan. There's a fruit, you know, at the end of this pursuit, right? Whatever it is, whatever field it is, and it requires, so there has to be that commitment to that, right? And a willingness to sacrifice oneself to that end, right? We know in every one of these fields, they do things that are repetitive. How to do something that is repetitive and remain interested in that or curious about it. So Srila Guru Maharaj says, if all these fields require this level of self-sacrifice and discipline and self-giving, then in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, should it be, say, equal to that, at least? Or should it be more? The finite's going to meet the infinite. We hear Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa from Srila Rupa Goswami that Krishna, bhakti, devotion, love and affection for Krishna captures Krishna. It attracts him. Inconceivable that the infinite could be genuinely attracted to the finite. Not just like, oh, you finite, you did so much suffering, and you're like, okay, give you something good, you know, for your trouble and your loyalty and, you know, your dedication. Here, have something, some liberation, or you want something a little different, better than that, or not like that. That how, can we imagine that Krishna, the infinite, could actually be genuinely attracted to the finite? It seems almost absurd. But Rupa Goswami is telling us, not only is it possible, that is what is achieved in Krishna bhakti. Kleshagni subhada moksha laguta krit sandra nanda visheshatma Sri Krishna karshini chasa. That Krishna becomes attracted. All attractive Krishna is attracted to love and devotion in the heart of even a tiny finite being. It's such a valuable substance. So, elsewhere, Rupa Goswami says, Shraddha leads to Saru Sangha. And Guru Maharaj points out, actually, you can parse this in a way, and on the basis of Vishwanath as well, and say, Saru Sangha gives Shraddha leads to Saru Sangha. Saru Sangha, you know, Ado Shraddha, Saru Sangha, the Bhajana Kriya, then you take up the spiritual practices. Artha Nivritti, gradually unwanted things diminish and vanish, as well as misconception is gradually converted into proper conception. From misconception to sambandha gyan. Artha nivritti nishta. Then the faith becomes more deeply rooted, like we see with the plants, where they keep the little seedlings, like bhakti lata bij. Where do they keep the seedlings? That place is called a nursery, actually. Just like where they keep little babies. Why a nursery? Because in there, they have an extremely controlled environment. The temperature, the amount of moisture, all these things are carefully that in that nursery, right? Because these seedlings are in a very delicate condition. So they need a highly controlled environment and to be nourished in a particular way to grow to the point where they can be transplanted outside of that environment and not only survive, but thrive. So the necessity always, but particularly early stages of development, to be in a highly controlled atmosphere, right? Being supplied a particular type of nourishment, et cetera. What is that? That's an ashram, where there are, one is surrounded by good association and a controlled environment. Because in an early stage of development, one will not survive outside of such an environment. Right. So nishta means like deeply rooted. You see, at a certain point when the seedling is like taken root, then it can be transplanted. Right. And what are we told there as well? You know, weeding. Right? There are weeds that can choke the growth of the devotional cure. You have to be careful about that. It's a very delicate creeper, nishta, then what? Ruchi, some taste. One of the implications, if that's where ruchi is, which means, as Guru said, not this like sometimes a little taste, and then other times, oh, and then some, not like that, but substantial taste. The implication is before that, it's not there. Back to discipline, that one is disciplining oneself by engaging in certain spiritual practices every day that may even be, to a certain degree, you know, painful or suffering-inducing. Right? So many people do yoga. Yoga hurts. Why do they keep doing it? Why does someone keep practicing yoga? They have some goal in mind. I'm not going to answer why I think most people do it, but of the feminine persuasion. But even if you accept that, it means there's a goal in mind, a particular body type, whatever, and they're willing to engage in a certain amount of suffering to achieve that. So it's always there. But ruchi means, so those activities that not only were tasteless, but maybe even painfully executed, it's reached a point where there's some genuine taste for doing that. We may engage in a daily recitation of the scriptures as part of our spiritual practices. But we can say there are times when we hear things that capture our imagination, even our hearts, and we feel some joy from that. Right? The tendency of a neophyte devotee is to try and have a repeat experience. And that doesn't work. Then it goes away. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his song that, like, he compares, you know, Krishna revelation to lightning-like illumination. And we will be seeing that. We've seen the last few days. We'll see more. When there's lightning, temporarily everything is revealed and then back to darkness. So he's saying something like that. But what that, in the aftermath is left a hankering. It's ignited some hankering inside. Now that we see some possibility is there, there's hankering, but we shall avoid the step and repeat process. Krishna cannot be subjected to that. Revelation means what comes down into this plane. Sometimes by the grace of Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav, some glimpse comes to us, and we're inspired by that. It leaves us in a hankering position. It reminds me of the poem of this great poet, Wallace Stevens. He has a poem called The 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. And one of them is, he says, I do not know, I'm paraphrasing, I do not know which I prefer, the sound of the blackbird, the song of the blackbird, or just after. You understand, there's while something is happening, and then in the aftermath of that, recalling that. So Krishna consciousness moves along similar lines. And in fact, we say of the two, the after, that leaves one in a hankering position, separation. Separation, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Separation makes the heart grow fonder. Right? When there were some devotees who once said to Srila Guru Maharaj that like I forget their exact words, but it was along the lines of, you know, they're dutifully reading the Bhagavatam, but it's no longer an enlivening experience for them. And, you know, they're asking about that. And Guru Maharaj said, then stop reading the Bhagavatam. And they were like, oh, no, we don't want to do that. And he said, oh, then you do have some appreciation. Otherwise, you have no appreciation. Then I tell you to stop, you can stop. You say, no, we don't want to stop. Oh, so on some level, there is a little appreciation. When some disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur approached him, or actually they were like reluctant to approach him, you know, but he can pick up like, I think you want to say something, but you're shy to say that or reluctant. Or, and then one of them on the behalf said, well, you know, we've been here for 10 years going on with the program, and we don't feel like we've made any progress or that we've achieved what we set out for, and I'm really sorry to even say these words and express this to you, but that's what our concern is. And Srila Saraswati said, oh, I'm so relieved to hear that. And they thought, what? And he said, if after these 7, 10, whatever, how many years it is, that you thought you got Krishna consciousness, he said, then I would be very sad and disappointed. But that after this time, you invested all this time and energy and you feel you've not got, then I think you're moving in the right direction. And I'm happy to hear that. That shows your humility, and it also alludes to the infinite depth of Krishna consciousness. When Srila Saraswati Thakur was giving mantra diksha to someone, second initiation, and Guru Maharaj happened to be there, and these, remember, many of his disciples, they're Bengalis, Sanskritians. So after the person heard the mantras and left Srila Saraswati Thakur, went outside, and in the room, Saraswati Thakur could hear, overhear, that devotee having a discussion with another devotee about a particular line in the word pushpabanaya. Means like flower arrows. And Guru Maharaj said, Saraswati Thakur had this painful look on his face and he said, I have been trying to offer flowers to the holy body of Krishna for so long, and as yet, I am unsuccessful. And he said, this so long was as if to say for innumerable lifetimes. He said, as yet I am unsuccessful. Now, hearing that, someone could think like, well, I give up then. He's the leader. And the leader saying, expressing this type of disappointment and failure, apparent failure. But Srila Guru Maharaj, that's not his reading. Srila Guru Maharaj found in this to be very inspiring. In what way? In that he said, well, his reading of this is that, you know, as we saw, the finite achieving the infinite, this is so noble, so high, so inconceivable to achieve, that, and so compelling, that if after innumerable lifetimes of the attempt, that one cannot give up the pursuit. That's the point. If it's all what we can get in this lifetime, what I can get during this morning reading, what I can get now, what I can squeeze out of this mala by taking Krishna Nam, it is, you know, it's not the proper approach, and it's so short-sighted. The finite is going to capture the infinite. Right? So Guru Maharaj is saying, so it's that high, that noble, and that compelling that you can't give it up, even after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of pursuit and apparent non-achievement. So we will see, actually, Krishna consciousness is realized in the search for Sri Krishna. Hey Radhe Brajadevike Chalalite, Hey Nanda Shuno Kutaha. Srinivasa Charjan is praise of the Six Goswami, saying, Prabhupada liked this line very much, because he said, and they're saying, where are they? That's Kutaha. Hey Radhe Brajadevike Chalalite, Radharani Lalita Chalalite. Hey Radhe Brajadevi Keja Lalite, Hey Nanda Shuna, the son of Nanda, where are they? Are they on the banks of Radha Kunda? Are they in Govardhan? They're searching. Right? One of the main chapters of the Panchadvaya, five chapters, Rasalila and the 10th canto, is the gopi search for Krishna. And the Gopi Gita, the beautiful songs that are expressed by them in their search for Sri Krishna. So, in terms of considering time well spent, in this world, there are research scientists trying to find a cure for, say, cancer. Right. And they're so obsessed with this pursuit that it just dictates their lives. Right. They're always thinking about this. They may even appear to be absent-minded to other people. They have families, obligations, everything else that everyone else, but they're obsessed with this particular pursuit. And someone could point out that, you know, there, as of this moment, there is no cure for cancer, right? Yet there's all this research going on, and people doing that, you know, the 4 years college, 4 years medical, all of that to try and find this cure. They've spent their lifetimes doing it. And it means also, in as much as there's not been a cure, that means one failure after another, another attempt, and still they have not found the cure. And if you said to one of those research scientists that, oh, you've wasted your life and your time and your energy. Right? They'll say, no. This is so, you know, important. It's such a noble pursuit. These words come again. How high, how noble it is to dedicate yourself to this pursuit, you know, for the benefit of others, that they, even though they have failed repeatedly to find that, they still consider it worth pursuing. Right? And people will admire them for that. So that's for a cure for cancer, right? And we're talking about a cure for material existence. Right? And not just a cure for material existence and the mukti, free from negativity, concept, entering a neutral position, but entrance into the positive serving domain. So then how much energy should we be prepared to invest and self-sacrifice in this, to achieve this end, and how much failure or repeated attempts that end in failure should we be prepared to endure in this pursuit? Right. Depends on how committed one is to that. Right? If you, you know, in art, if someone says like, oh, we're looking at the same old paintings over and over, you know. Like maybe someone works at the Uffizi Museum in Italy, and they, you know, I work here every day, see these things every day. It's like wallpaper to me, right? There's someone else that will make them cry. Say, oh, look how beautiful this is. The colors, I never grow tired of seeing these beautiful forms, colors, shapes, concepts. They're alive. They've kept their curiosity alive, but through discipline as well. But they're committed. They're obsessed with this particular thing, right? So, and that's going to vary according to individuals. But fortunately, within Krishna consciousness, there's such a variety. There's so much variegatedness in terms of what one can focus on in terms of service and things like that. But it requires being attentive, right? You know, we're dealing with the infinite. That means if we're in the proper mood and mode of thinking, that there'll be no end to what can be discovered, no end to what can be a source of enlivenment. But the obstacle is actually ourselves. Complacency, stereotype, thinking that we know it, as Saraswati, if you said you knew what it was, then I would be disappointed. Guru Maharaj goes so far as to say that if you think you know what Krishna consciousness is or you've achieved that, he not only says like that's not healthy or it's unhealthy, he says if you think like that, you're finished. Those are his words. You're finished. So we find, as we speak about the infinite, you go to approach Krishna, something new to be realized, Navayovana. Read some particular part of the Bhagavatam, some particular pastime, and it's as if you think, no, I read this before. Oh, but new things are coming. Why didn't I notice these things before? Because it's something alive, living and growing. And on this subject of self-sacrifice, we shouldn't think, oh, that's for the neophytes. They're being, because they're crude, they're raw, they need to be refined, so they're being told these things. But we hear in that Bhagavatam, you know, that Kasyana Bhavo Shadeva Vidmahe Tabangri Renu Sparsha Dikara Yadvanchana Sri Lalana Charatapo Vihaya Kaman Suchiram Yatam Rita. The wives of Kaliya, after Krishna's lotus feet pummeled the heads of Kaliya pulverize the rubies on his head and the ruby powder that made the Jamuna rosé, and knocked all the poison out of him, and knocked the sense into him, and he achieved Vaishnavata on account of this, and his wives were astonished to see this transformation. They're offering prayers. And in this prayer, they're saying, Yadvanchana Sri Lalana Charatapo Vihaya Kaman Suchiram Dritamrita. What goddess Sri Lakshmi Devi, she did lifetimes of austerities in the Tapovan. Tapovan means the van where you do tapa, the forest where you do austerities. They're saying, lifetime after lifetime, she was doing austerities there. Why? She wanted to gain entrance into the Rasalila. And in this sense, in this context, achieve the lotus feet of Krishna. So they're saying, what was not achieved by her, our husband, he achieved. How wonderful is this? Right? While others are hankering for a connection with the lotus feet of Krishna, he couldn't remove the lotus feet of Krishna from his multiple heads. Sometimes it said he had 1,100 principal ones. So look at the sacrifice. Why is she sacrificing? Why did, after one lifetime, she said, well, I didn't get it. So move on to something else. That's what Guru Maharaj found appealing, and it's consistent with what is expressed in the Bhagavatam, that Krishna is so attractive, Krishna, right? Akarshan, he's so, ahoitukiya pratyata means irresistible, being irresistibly drawn to Krishna, yet somehow not achieving and not dissuaded from that pursuit. That is Krishna consciousness. And Srila Guru Maharaj also said, and it has the ring of the prayers of Madhavendra Puri, where he said that if you're and honest with yourself, and spiritual life requires that, you know, for one to be, you know, brutally honest with oneself. Otherwise, you cannot make progress. So he said, if you can honestly admit that, like as those disciples of Saraswati Thakur did, that after so many years, I've got nothing, or I seem to be regressing, right? Along these lines, that have not achieved. If you can say, yes, I've not got it, he said, but you cannot give it up. You're so compelled, you have to go on. You cannot give up the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. Guru Maharaj said, then you might be a devotee. He didn't say, then you're a devotee. Even then, Guru Maharaj, he's so straight, he said, then you might just be a devotee, because that's what a devotee is. It's not based upon, I did this and now I achieved that, right? That's, as Guru Maharaj said to me, you know, one time, and when I came before him like that, he's sitting in that chair, the plantation chair, in that very spot, and said, you've heard the expression, no risk, no gain. Yes, you know what I was saying? Yes. And I was thinking about my own journey to his lotus feet. And I thought, yes, I risked, you know, everything, but I got you, so I'm totally happy and satisfied. So yes, no risk, no gain. I risked and I gained. So, and that we can understand. Right. But then he said to me, you know, but there is another higher plane. I said, oh? He said, yes, all risk and no gain. And really, when I heard that, I just sort of, I was like, did he just say that? All risk and no, and I, and now I had a bewildered, perplexed look on my face, and then Guru Maharaj started to smile. Yes. He said, that is the plane of the Brajagopis. They're willing to risk everything and gain nothing. They have no interest and just risk everything for Krishna. Are you ready for that? And I thought, where is this going to go? And then he began to explain more, saying that because we're have not properly, fully conceived Krishna conception, and we're, you know, we're haunted by the world as being the substantial place, and we're thinking Krishna consciousness sort of Krishna like abstract, or it's talk or theory, or others say mythology, this, that, or the other thing. So we think this is the substantial plane, and that we're uncertain of. So it's like all risk and no gain. Right? Excuse me. Yeah. Right. That we're thinking. Yeah. That I'm risking everything and I'm gaining nothing. Right. Think, but as Guru Maharaj also in another place, as you proceed east, automatically you're withdrawing from west. So in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, there's a gradual transition from, you know, a mundane, egoistic, egocentric world toward this Krishna-centered world, like the Isya Vasyamidam Sarvam Upanishad Sloka. So he said, as this transition takes place, first you thought, this is the world and I'm risking all of this and the gain is uncertain. But then gradually, as, like you said, what does it say in the verse? Anartha Nivritti. As the mundane is gradually diminishing and vanishing, and the spiritual, that means simultaneously, the spiritual is gradually appearing, manifesting, and being felt as something real, tangible, substantial. Then the shift takes place, and you will realize when it's fully expressed that it's all, that what appears to be all risk and no gain, and its final and ultimate expression is all gain and no risk. You didn't risk anything because all the so-called risk was of things that are insubstantial, temporary to begin with. So Srila Guru Maharaj, he could approach the Ramananda Sambad year after year, his entire life, and extract something new from there. Because it's living. That means it will show new color, new character. That means his Krishna conception is a living one. So it's showing new color, new qualities, characteristics, and therefore enlivening, invigorating. if we allow ourselves to become complacent and a stereotype of what it is to be there, then gradually we will become diseased, right? Like the when I had a few moments of serving Srila Prabhupada in his quarters in New York, and privately, and he kept asking me questions. It's interesting. He knew somehow that I knew more or less everything that was going on there. And so he got all this information out of me before the leaders came in and lied. Or maybe that's too harsh a word, or, you know, omitted certain things. You know, he realized somehow, like, oh, Krishna's arranged this boy to come and like fill me in on everything. So then when they all come in, I'll already know what's going on here. But he also expressed some interest, like, and what I was doing personally. And one of the things I mentioned besides working for ISKCON Press was preaching to Indians in the New York area with a partner. And that he was kind of interested in to hear about what it was like. And I told him a few examples. But when I said, but Srila Prabhupada, sometimes, you know, it's difficult to preach to them because they think they already know these things. And I said, like, you know, one man said, oh, I know what is Krishna. And he like that. And then I remember, because he is eating, and he threw his head and he said, that is their disease. And what's to show how, like, Shastra is coming out of his lotus mouth. That's in the Brahma Stuti of the Bhagavatam. John, 14th chapter, 10th chapter. Janantu eva janantu kimba huktya name prabho manasu vapaso manasu vapaso vaibhavam tava gotra. Where Brahma says, others, janantu eva janantu, they may say they know you. I don't have much to say about us. Saying, so Brahma is saying, those who say they know much about it, that is their disease. We think we know what Krishna consciousness is. That is a disease. We're dealing with the infinite. So repeatedly, we have to, it's like George Orwell said something about, you know, how the truth, like how vigilant you have to be to see what's in front of your nose, what's right in front of you, to look at that in a fresh way. Right? So that can only be done with humility. Right? Yet I have to know. Right? Let me again with, you know, say, in good faith, hear, read these things. And if it pleases Krishna to reveal something to me that's new and inspiring, it may be. But Guru Maharaj also quoted this Vedic aphorism that it took him a while to understand, which is, avritir sarva shastranam bodhadapi gariyasi, that said, repeated hearing is more important than so-called understanding. And normally that would run contrary to the kind of his ontological method. So, but you understood here that, so what does Kaviraj Goswami say in Charitamritam? Repeatedly hear this with faith. Faithfully hear this repeatedly, and it will be revealed to you. That kind of thing. Shraddhan vato anushranayad atavarnayadyak. And how much faith we have to have in Guru and Vaishnav, and not our own assessment of things. Then we put ourselves in a position of being what Gurudev called fit receivers. Become a fit receiver. How do you become a fit receiver? By placing all your faith in Guru and Vaishnav, and not your own mental, intellectual, or experiential capacity. I mean, today's the disappearance day of Srila Abhiram Thakur, who is one of the Dwadasha Gopals who descended with Nityananda Prabhu. That means Dwadasha means 12. So there are these 12 cowherd boys, principal, many descended, but there are 12 principal cowherd boys surrounding Nityananda Prabhu. And of them, like Subal and Sridham, and he is said to be Sridham. You always hear Subal, Sridham, like Lalita Vishaka, Subal, Sridham. And they're the followers of Nityananda, the Avadut, Savadutam, we say in the prayer, a delightful way. They're delightfully eccentric. That's why I always think when we hear that Shivananda Sen had to bring 200 Mahabhagavatas from Navadvip to Rath Yatra every year, what that must have been like. 200 who are like completely different individual, they have certain, you know, tendencies, qualities, characteristics, and somehow he's going to take all 200 of them to Puri. And there's no like train, or they're not going to fly in, you know, so to speak. They're walking there, or maybe sometimes bullock cart, whatever he has to arrange. Tolls and all, you know, visas and, you know, filling out applications and and their fooding, lodging, etc. We know at one point when Nityananda felt somewhat neglected that he kicked Shivananda Sen and cursed that all of his family members would drop dead because he was hungry. And Sivananda Sen's wife freaked out. Nityananda cursed our children, you know. And he said, they should be cursed. We should all die. Why? We inconvenience Nityananda. I mean, he didn't follow through on it. But and you see that the hunger of Nityananda. But so Abhiram Thakur, one of those 12 cowherd boys who descended, and he, some tree in connection with Krishna, he converted into a flute, but not like a branch of a tree, but the trunk, a tree trunk. Like we've seen here recently, the storm, where whole trees fell down. So if you want to understand something about the strength of Abhiram Thakur, that tree trunk that he used as a flute and could twirl, and it said that it would require 64 men to lift it. But he could play with that. And he was a grihastha, and he had a whip known as Jai Mangal, part of his divine paraphernalia, and that if he would whip someone, they would get Krishna Prem. And he may have even whipped Srinivasacharya. And his wife intervened and said, the boy cannot handle so much Krishna Prem. Prabhu, stop. You know. But when Srinivasacharya came, he was young, and Abhiram Thakur thought, oh, very beautiful boy, showing his qualifications. And we've always heard this example, and it's on point of what we're discussing this evening. We've always heard the example of, you know, that what sort of faith do you have in Guru? If he says, that rope is a snake, it's a snake. That snake is a rope, you see a rope. And I've mentioned, as you know, a sidebar, that to see a rope as a snake is one thing. To see a snake as a rope might be more difficult. But Abhiram Thakur did that to Srinivasacharya to test him. And he passed in flying colors. And Guru Maharaj makes the point. This is in other words, and here's where it becomes not, you know, merely a story or, you know, a delightful story or surprising, unusual type of story. As Guru Maharaj is extracting that, saying that we have our individual experience of things, right? And each one of us thinks in varying degrees that we know something, we've learned something. Everybody is somewhat proud of what they know and what they've experienced. Every last person, right? Even a child. So then you come in connection with Guru and Vaishnav, Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, Vaishnav. That needs to be left behind. It's an obstacle. It will not be helpful. It's an obstacle to learning and to making progress. So what he's doing is through this, see a rope as a snake as a rope. It's saying, whatever your estimation of the world is, he's going to contradict that and contradict it again. So when you come to the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnav, and you begin hearing from the revealed truth, the scripture, Shastra, it's going to necessarily will contradict your gathered experience of this world and relative qualifications. Otherwise, you're not trying hard enough or doing it right. If it only seems to be supporting what you already thought you knew, it's not helpful. Right? We're ready for total transformation. A complete transition from wherever we were previously to the new servitor identity, from an exploiting unit to a dedicating unit. Right? Yeah, some acquired relative skills can be employed in service. That's another thing. But we're talking about more the willingness to that our belief in the revealed truth, and as particularly represented by Guru and Vaishnav, that we can fully believe that and ignore acquired prejudice, acquired tendency, mundane experience. That's why he's saying, see the snake as a rope as a snake. So in the Bhagavatam, and it's echoed again in Charitamritam, sloka is there, Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Hrit Saroja Ase Shutekshita Pato Nanunata Pungsang. It's very beautiful because it's saying, according to how the devotee conceives, the Lord appears on the lotus of their hearts. Nishna Ruchi, Ashakti, Bhav. To continue that, once there's some ruchi, real ruchi, sustained relish, taste, then there's an attachment to that that cannot be broken, right? That further developed blossoms, flowers. So what was the bij, bhakti lata bij, implanted in the heart? The heart was seeded with Krishna conception, right? And not, it's not something for it, it's innate, right? But there's a process to achieve that which is innate. So seeded, Krishna conception is seeded in the soil, the consciousness of that disciple. But at this stage, and bhava bhakti is blossomed. And what does Guru Maharaj say? Like a flower, it has some enchanting aroma. Then the inconceivable of inconceivable things, the infinite Krishna is attracted to the devotion from the heart of that finite soul. He's genuinely attracted. Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. So, and why am I saying this? Because, what did I say before?
Forget everything you knew before. Complete transformation.
Yes, required.
From exploiting unit.
Oh, to a dedicating unit. We're trying to transition from the exploiting tendency to transition that reconverted into dedicating, self-giving, as opposed to self-absorbing and consuming. So that means, I'm saying that verse, Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavi, what is it? Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Shutekshita, Tvam Bhakti Yoga Paribhavita Hrit Saroja. That Hrit Saroja means the lotus of the heart. Ase Shutekshita Pato. That's the point. Shruta Ikshita. Ikshita Aksha. That means the eyes, seeing. And saying on this pate, on this path, you see by hearing. That's what it means. Hearing from that source, then you're seeing whatever it is before you. Right? That's what it means. We're hearing the revealed truth from Guru and Vaishnav and reconceiving what is before us. And that requires constant vigilance. Right? And avoiding complacency. Right. So last thing I'll just say, it reminds me of when Srila Prabhupada began the Krishna consciousness movement. I mean, it's Western transplantation, and he was in New York, and he was years later reflecting back on it, his chanting in Tompkins Square Park with the mridanga and the kartals and getting all, you know, the local beatniks, hippies, you know, to join in. He once said something I found very interesting. He said, my chanting of, you know, Krishna Nam and his reading the books, he said, is not dependent upon the reaction that I get from others. This is what I normally do. I like doing this. So in other words, it's not that, if there's some people there, then he's chanting, no people there, then he's not chanting. No, he's chanting. He's taking Krishna Nam anyway, engages in Krishna Kirtan. He's reading Chaitanya Charitamritam on the ship on the way over. Why? What does he say there? Daily I am relishing the nectarine of Sri Chaitanya Leela, which is the source of my all vitality. So in the midst of the ocean, you know, really, like, that's like being in the middle of nowhere, literally. And if you saw it from space, you would see the boat would look like a speck in the middle of this giant ocean. And on that, so there, no surrounding reinforcing environment of Vrindavan that he just left. The middle of the ocean, on this little speck boat and a room in there, what is he doing? He's reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and daily I'm relishing the nectarine of Sri Chaitanya Leela, the source of my all vitality. He's saying, this is where I get life. This is what keeps me enlivened. He is extracting from there, like a bee, like Guru Maharaj says in that sloka, at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prapanna Jivanamritam, Srimad, Sri Srimad Bhagavat Padam Bhujamadu Sharotsavai Shatpadai, Nikipta Marubindabas Chaparito Brashta Mukhat Gunjitai, Yatne Kinchidihahritam Nidraparo Sri Ortina, Tanmaya Buyo Buyito Rajangsi, Parasam Lagnani Te Shambhaji. So what does he use in the first line, which is poetic? Shatpadai means six-legged. It's a poetic way of saying a bee. Right? So it's Sri Srimad Bhagavat Padambuja Pada Ambuja, right? Lotus Padambuja Madhu, so Madhu Utsava, a honey festival for the bees. That's what these, and he's saying, these devotees, they're madly relishing this divine substance, which is compared to bees relishing honey. And so mad is their relish that some drops are falling from their mouths. And Guru Maharaj is saying, I'm collecting that. What has fallen from the lotus lips of these devotees, and I'm presenting that to you. So it's always through the devotees that when Shyamananda Prabhu asked Srila Guru Maharaj, the father of Rai Kishori and Nimai, Nitai, and all, yes, talking about, you know, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita, Kriyatam iti katopina labhyate, tatra lolam bhuyam ekulam, janmakoti sukritarana labhyate. So you won't get this after 10 million verse of doing the right thing, but how there has to be loyam, some genuine hunger, hankering. So Shyamananda Prabhu said, how to get that hunger? And Guru Maharaj said, associate with the hungry. With some, you're kind of blasé. And then you're around some people who are really, you know, like salivating. They're so eager, they're so hungry. Right? And they're describing their anticipation, you know, that will awaken hunger in you. So if we've become blasé, it's through superior association that we can be reinvigorated, right? Always through association, superior association. Sadhu Sangha Satovare. Hare Krishna.